The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
It is the 9 till noon show and it's Michaela Clark sitting in this morning for Greg Hughes. A very good morning to everyone listening. There's plenty to come over the next few hours as it's Wednesday. We'll have Wellness Wednesday and we'll also be joined later by Chris Ashmore for Business Matters. And shortly we'll be discussing the ongoing issue of fly tipping across the Northwest. And also make sure to stay tuned as at 10:15 this morning our sports team will be launching their guest panel for the Road to Croker special Big Match Countdown live show at the Clonry Hotel in Letterkenny on Monday the 21st of July at 8pm. And tickets for that event are selling fast. They are €20 and you can purchase them on our website highlandradio.com. Don't forget you can get in touch with the show today by calling 074 91 25000 or text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000, and you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. First this morning, though, we're going to have a look at what is making the papers, on starting with the Irish Times. The race for the presidency gathered pace yesterday, with Fine Gael nominating former European Commissioner Mairead McGuinness and independent TD Catherine Connolly expected to formally launch her candidacy on Wednesday, which is today. There are also moves to organise a nomination via the support of at least 20 Oireachtas members of another independent candidate. Businessman Declan Ganley was said to be contacting TDs and senators about support for a potential presidential run. Ms McGuinness's name will go forward for ratification at a Fine Gael event in September, which will mark the start of the party's presidential election campaign. Meanwhile, the Labour Party is to issue a consultative survey to its membership on the presidency after it met Ms Connolly yesterday. Many will know the name of Mairead McGuinness. She is the former Midlands Northwest MEP before she got her role as European Commissioner. And there's a lot of talk about, is Mary Lou going to run or not? Recently, when she was interviewed on it, she said that she wasn't ruling it out. But obviously then the question rises, who will take over the role then as Sinn Féin leader? And there was interesting commentary, I think it was last week, where they discussed the potential of Donegal Deputy Piers Doherty maybe taking over that role. But there's so many factors that feed into that, and will she eventually run? But the question then rises as well. I heard some talk this morning. Is it possible that she has a bigger profile than some of them names going forward at the moment? And could she gather more support? You know, Sinn Féin did well in the last election. They didn't get enough to be the main party in government. But could her profile reach beyond Sinn Féin party supporters? So it'll be interesting. I feel as if we're not that close to the election, but you know, if you were interested in being a candidate, I think you would need to announce sooner rather than later. Looking now to the Irish Independent, Charlie Weston writes, one in three families spend beyond their means and get into debt when their children go back to school. Over 60% of people surveyed said they were finding the expense of kitting out students a huge financial burden, according to research commissioned by the Irish League of Credit Unions. The League's annual Back to School survey, conducted by iReach, tracks the costs of children returning to school as well as broader cost of living factors. The survey of 729 parents found 33% of them get into debt, covering back to school costs. The average debt this year is €376. Now, some of the findings include 64% of people find back to school costs a burden. Almost one in three parents go into debt to cover expenses. €1,450 is the average cost of primary school, and €1,560 is the average cost of secondary school. Almost three in five parents think schools don't do enough to cover expenses, and 37% are sacrificing family holidays to cover those expenses. Now, the thought of parents facing debt just to send their children to education when, you know, it's everybody has the right to education is just crazy. I don't have children, so I don't really understand, you know, exactly what it takes to send a child to school, but I just think it's crazy that people are being forced into debt because of this. And there's so many people out there that they simply can't afford those costs. And, you know, what's the knock-on impact of that? You know, what are they missing out on by being forced to pay out these huge costs? Now, the Irish Daily Mail, measles on the rise with fears over level of vaccinations. Measles infections have tripled in the last 7 years, and experts have warned the lives of children are at risk if Ireland does not raise its vaccination rates. A total of 207 people contracted the potentially fatal infection in 2024, compared to just 76 in 2018. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College Dublin, told the Irish Daily Mail the public are being deceived by anti-vaccination propaganda online. He also warned Ireland could be heading back to the rate seen in the 1950s, where around 8,500 people caught measles every year. Now, this comes after the death over the weekend of a young child in Liverpool who was suspected of having measles. I agree that anti-vaccination propaganda, everybody is entitled to their beliefs in relation to it, but just whenever it puts people's lives at risk. And I just think, personally, if there is support there and there's vaccinations there, it's up to everybody individually. But if it could potentially save your life, I would agree about taking it. Now, looking at the Irish Daily Star, Ireland's budget plans, it could be rocked for years to come by Donald Trump's tariff wars. The warning was sounded by Taoiseach Micheál Martin as talks between the US and EU go down to the wire. Trump has threatened a 30% levy on all goods from Europe being shipped into the US. It comes as the government is drawing up a new national development plan to tackle long-term goals such as housing, energy, transport and water supply. Mr. Martin said the goal of the NDP and the upcoming budget is the transformation of Irish infrastructure over the next number of years, very significant investment, particularly in energy and the grid, electricity and, of course, in water, roads and public transport. But he did warn, however, of course, the backdrop to that is the very troubling, difficult negotiations with the United States and the European Union in relation to tariffs and trade. He said, obviously, if there's a breakdown in those talks or if tariffs at the scale being suggested by the US were ever to come to pass, it would significantly alter our projections budgetary-wise for the next number of years. I think there's so much talk, you know, we see Trump continually making these announcements and we kind of think, oh, there Trump goes again. But when you actually think about it in terms of the budget, what sacrifice is that going to mean for people here in Ireland? You know, the healthcare sector is crying out for additional funding. There's no housing. People are still struggling with the cost of living crisis. And if these tariffs now come into play, they're obviously going to have to be incorporated into the budget. But obviously, serious questions need to be asked. At what expense will that be at? Moving on to The Sun. Parents hit... I already did that story in a different paper. I find these papers, they're the same stories in everyone. But what I did want to talk about in the Irish Sun, push to end doll prayer and buying. The doll prayer and the tradition of buying to the Can Corla are on the chopping block. Politicians will make their final contributions this week before the summer recess, with the doll and Shannon closed until September. Ahead of the break, Sinn Féin and Labour have tabled motions to end two house customs. Sinn Féin has proposed the practice of buying to the Can Corla, currently Verona Murphy, to be pulled, given that all citizens are equal. And Labour wants a daily prayer read out before the day's business to be replaced by a brief moment of reflection, as not all TDs are religious. Anti leader Pádraig Tobin said it was silly season in the Dáil. He added, it is just incredible to see these minor issues take up political energy this week. In terms of buying to the Can Corla, is that sentiment, do you think, of having respect for people in different positions? Do you agree that that should be followed, or is it being lost? I know, you know, we obviously don't hold anybody any higher than anybody else, but sometimes I think maybe it's just manners or a bit of respect to acknowledge someone's position. Maybe not by buying, but, you know, it does kind of signal the start of doll proceedings as well. In the Irish Daily Mirror, a sad story. Country star Lisa McHugh has revealed she has been diagnosed with a brain disorder. The mum of two, who is battling functional neurological disorder, shared photos and videos on Instagram from an incredibly scary and very difficult couple of weeks in hospital. Lisa, 36, said she underwent CT scans, MRIs, X-rays, blood tests, lumbar punctures and every kind of test you could imagine, leading to her FND diagnosis. The Scottish-born singer, whose parents are Irish, added FND is a condition that affects the way the brain and nervous system works. It leads to neurological symptoms such as limb weakness, paralysis, seizures, walking difficulties, spasms, sensory issues, cognitive problems and more. I know Lisa does frequent Donegal. So many people will be familiar with her, and particularly in the country scene. So a very difficult time at the moment for herself and her family. The Inish Times, a headline today: Council stops accepting cash at Buncrana office. Donegal County Council will stop accepting cash to settle fines, rent and bills at its Buncrana office from the 1st of August. Citing operational reasons, the council says anyone wishing to make a payment by cash can travel to the Cardonna Public Services Centre or any of the county's other PSCs and make an over-the-counter payment there. The decision coincides with the relocation of the local authority's temporary office from Buncrana's main street back to the former town council headquarters on St Orne's Road. The move comes following an extensive refurbishment and extension of that building, which now houses the Inishowen Innovation Hub. In a statement provided to the Inish Times, the local authority said that as part of its continuing effort to improve customer service, it will offer a new online payment system called MyCoco.ie. This online payment system will be rolled out on a phased basis and initially offered to the council's social housing tenants. Donegal County Council's income collection staff, they say, are available to assist tenants and payment options if required. When decisions like this are made, I often think about the elderly people who just don't function online, or, you know, have very limited access, and maybe they live on their own, don't have any family members that can help them with this. And, you know, maybe they don't have a mode of transport to travel to Buncrana either, or to Cardonna, excuse me. So, yeah, just think of them whenever there's such a move from, I suppose, a move towards a cashless society. Now, looking at the Donegal Post, Dermot Sherry writes, Donegal Municipal District Councillors have criticised the government for blaming Donegal County Council for social housing availability in the county following the publication of a social housing league table. Speaking during Donegal MD's July meeting, Councillor Jimmy Brogan and Councillor Noel Jordan expressed negative feedback to the government's publication of the social housing league table. However, the recently appointed Cathaoirleoga for Donegal MD, Councillor Micheál Nochtain, defended the government's stance. Donegal County Council sat last on a league table comparing the delivery of new social housing between the state's 31 local authorities. The County Council achieved just 46% of the target set for it under the government's Housing for All plan, providing 248 newly built social homes between 2022 and 2024, which was far shy of the 534 expected of it. We did have quite a lengthy discussion on that topic with Councillor Jerry McMonagall at the time of the publication of that table. And I suppose the sentiment among councillors locally is not enough support is forthcoming from central government. There's too much red tape and they simply can't build the houses because they don't have the resources to do so in terms of funding. Letterkenny Live, All-Ireland final ticket scramble set to begin. Donegal are through to the All-Ireland SFC decider and the hunt for tickets to see the Kerry clash begins right away. The allocations for both counties will be in and around the 60,000 mark, with Galway and Armagh given an even split of 59,212 in 2024. The majority of the remainder is gobbled up by a mixture of sponsors and corporate. Donegal pummeled Meath 3-26 to 15 at the weekend to set up a repeat of the 2014 final in which the Kingdom prevailed. So no doubt Donegal will be outgunning to see that result a lot different this time, and I can only imagine the scramble for tickets. Finally now, the Finn Valley Voice will be discussing this hopefully a little later as well. The headline there is urgent action needed to address endometriosis neglect in Ireland. Sinn Féin councillor Dakota Nick Van Mann, who has first-hand experience with endometriosis, says there is an urgent need to address the neglect of women with the condition in Ireland. She's urged the government to support Sinn Féin's Dáil motion, which I believe was moved last evening, aimed at enhancing access to endometriosis care for thousands of affected women across the country. The motion is set to be introduced following a series of public gatherings organised by Sinn Féin President Mary Lou MacDonald, specifically with individuals impacted by endometriosis in Ireland. Well, that's it. That's what's in the papers today. If you have any views on any of those that we discussed, get in touch by calling 074 91 25000, texting or WhatsApping 086 60 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. The time is now 21 minutes past nine. Now, the Irish Red Cross Creaslaw Community Support Fund was established as an immediate humanitarian response to the Creaslaw explosion, which claimed the lives of 10 people on October the 7th, 2022. Almost €2 million was raised to support those who were impacted by the tragedy, and an event last night saw the closure of the fund and the final allocations of that funding issued. Deirdre McGarvey, Irish Red Cross Secretary General, joins me in studio now. Good morning to you, Deirdre.
Good morning, Michaela.
So I suppose we'll go back to the start in terms of, you know, when the money was raised, what has been done up until this point?
Yes, and firstly, I think we must all remember, as I think we all do, and particularly those people here in the local community, that tragedy in October 2022, 10 lives were lost. Many lives were changed irreparably from that moment. Yeah. People injured, people lost their jobs, people lost their apartments, people lost their peace of mind, I guess. So for those people who were directly affected, and for the community who bore witness to that in various different ways, that is why we have been here in doing a lot of work around this fundraised money. And I think the second part of the story is the extraordinary outbreak of solidarity, compassion, care, and expressed through the, as so often is the way, through donations to charity. And it was on Post and Apple Green in the first instance who came together with the Irish Red Cross to launch that appeal. And it is very interesting, the money really all came in those first 6 months, but it did come in over the following 6 months. 1.9 million was raised, 6,191 donations, and the vast majority of them were small donations from individuals and small businesses, and indeed some very significant donations. So for us,
we always talk about that. Anything people can give, that small donation makes a huge difference.
It added up to an extraordinary amount of money. And it was very interesting. The Irish Red Cross has had branches in Donegal for many, many decades, and we will continue to have our branches and our volunteers in Donegal. And it is a facet of how local we are is that one of our members was very much involved from the get-go, you know, in that first half hour, in that first hour, and that came with the commitment of our volunteers here to be there for the families, be there for the bereaved, personal visits in the days and weeks immediately afterwards. And that swiftly followed on from, the fundraising from all over Ireland. It was extraordinary. We haven't seen anything in the Irish Red Cross for the domestic tragedy because, thankfully, we don't have such awful tragedies of an acute loss of life nature in Ireland too often, thank God. So our role then in that fundraising appeal, because we are a humanitarian organisation, we were trusted to figure out what it is that we can best help with and what it is that other agencies, you know, were able to do. And everybody's needs are different. There is no one size fits all when you're dealing with that kind of a tragedy. So what we were able to do was channel the money in those first days and weeks directly to those who needed it. Even for, like, my house, I've lost my accommodation, you know, how can I deal with this? So just the absolute immediate acute needs. And then in the run up to the funerals and the cost associated with that. Yeah. And every cost is different. Humanitarian requirements take different forms for different people, depending on where they are. And what we were able to do is, again, through the vast experience that the global network has, is to lean on that to understand how best and transparently and fairness to honour our principles and actually to meet the need and to meet the additional needs that were not being met elsewhere. So the immediate needs were met. And then over the course of 2023, a framework was devised, an oversight group with independent as well as local representation on it, and the board and the governance of the Irish Red Cross determined.
And that input from locals was obviously key, because, you know, they're on the ground, they experienced what happened with the tragedy, and to know exactly, like, you know, with the loss of the shop, they knew that there needed to be resources put in place there to cater for people locally.
Yeah, and I have to pay tribute to my colleagues and indeed to our volunteers. They have been on the ground since hour one. And one of my colleagues in the Dublin office, he dropped everything in his life and basically spent 5 months here, 3 days a week, listening. And that was one of the things I really heard paid tribute to at the community event in Creaslaw last night, is the ability and the patience of the Red Cross to listen, to bear witness and to do more listening. And in that way, the framework that was devised within a few months was used in a transparent way, because as a charity, we have obligations to the public who donated, to the regulators and to the general Irish public who support all sorts of charities, not just the Irish Red Cross. So there was all of that, I'm going to call it the paperwork, the governance that you have to observe. And I think the public wants us to, and to do it promptly and fairly. So I'm very happy to say, and we were on this radio station on several occasions reporting that, you know, quite quickly, 90% of those funds were distributed to the bereaved families, to those who were injured, to those who lost their jobs and those who lost their apartments, and the connected people. So the vast majority of those funds were expended, were spent within the first year.
Yeah.
As that should be, because humanitarian needs are first and predominantly acute in the moment. From the very beginning, we knew that we would hold back a certain small amount of funds, because we know from research internationally and with other traumatic events that trauma has a long tail.
Yeah.
It has a long aftermath, and it is community organisations and groups that are the ones left picking up the fragments, I guess, of a broken
and I suppose
community.
It was all so new to them too.
Yeah.
They didn't know where to start as well. So having, you know, the likes of yourselves to liaise with, they knew what support they could provide them too.
Yeah. And really, you have to wait and see what the other agencies are doing, what the local authorities have been fantastic, you know, what the state agency have been doing. And trauma, as I said, takes many, many different forms. So very 8%, 9% of the funds, it turned out to be, after all the personal individual payments were made, it was 165,000, you know, out of the original 1.9 million. So we listened to ideas for, I guess, more medium and long-term community benefit once the individual giving phase was over.
Yeah.
And the end of last year, you know, we determined that it was community groups that were the key to supporting in terms of long-term community resilience and dealing with trauma. And I'm very happy to say that we launched a scheme with three themes emerging from our listing. Theme number one was youth development. There were so many young people killed and affected. And then there was the trauma, you know, trauma and recovery. And then there was a theme around commemoration and commemorative events, and to get that remembrance theme. So a total of 18 organisations applied. Two were completely ineligible because they were just from different parts of the country and were completely not connected. And of the 16 applications, they were actually made by 14 organisations. Two organisations had done, you know, two separate projects.
Right.
So we were very happy to be able to use the fund to fund all 14 organisations that had made a request. So that is something that we're particularly proud of. And also, the money didn't go to just groups that were operating in Creaslaw. The people who were affected by that tragedy, they have a very wide footprint here in Letterkenny, locally across the townland, but also in other parts of Ireland and indeed internationally. So it's communities that are focused on the Creaslaw tragedy and the resilience and those three themes afterwards. So we were very pleased in the event last night. I mean, it's not a celebration. It is a marking. It is a milestone of the generosity of the public, of the listening that went on in those months, weeks and years. And it is the resilience of that community who were affected by that tragedy. And it is community organisations are the lifeblood. We all know this.
Yeah.
They're lifeblood of our villages and towns and townlands.
And I think because Donegal is such a rural county as well, you know, people in towns and villages depend so much on them organisations, and they are really the heart of the community.
Yeah. And it is wonderful as well because the Irish Red Cross has developed an expertise in, I guess, dealing with trauma and helping people to work with people who are experiencing trauma. So one of, in one sense, it's unconnected with the expenditure of this fund, but really from other parts of our work. We will be coming here in next month to do a sort of a train the trainer, where we are giving between 6 and 8 people from the community, and again, of geographical community as well as a community of connectedness, so that they are professionally trained in dealing with a traumatised community in their work, whether they be, you know, facing the public in their different jobs and just being leaders within their own community. So we're very proud of that. We will be back in the coming months as well to, provide, resilience, mental health supports in the form of psychological first aid. And as I said, our branches are here. They were here before, during, and definitely will be here after. So in one sense, it's not the Red Cross, you know, pulling up our tents and moving out. It's very much the closing of this phase of the fundraising appeal, community fund expenditure. And it's been an extraordinary honour, privilege to have been given the opportunity, I think, by the Irish public and all those donors to engage in such a traumatic period of time for everybody, everybody. And it continues.
And in terms of those projects that now have received this, I suppose, last tranche of funding, there is two dedicated memorial projects being supported by the fund. We know that these were proposed maybe around this time last year, following a meeting. So do you know at what stage they're at the moment?
Well, there was 400 of the 16 applications were from 14 organisations. They totaled to €460,000.
Yes.
And we had €165,000. So obviously we were not able to give everybody the funding that they asked for. And every single project was also seeking funding from other sources.
Right, okay.
So what we have said, some of those projects, the Memorial Garden, they are places of rest. They are places of remembrance. There are also youth development, helping young people deal with trauma. There's a range of different projects at different timelines, and what we have asked every organisation to do is to send us a report upon the completion of their project. Some of the reports we do expect, you know, within 6 months.
Yeah.
Some we don't expect, you know, for 12 months, if not 14 months. But we will be staying in touch with these projects and receiving those reports, and again, putting this information available where the funding, where part of the funding, all of these projects are a work in progress, and they are a work of, I guess, to symbolise everything that has happened here, is that they are work of many parts, you know, many supporters, many donors, many volunteers.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that ongoing support. I suppose even myself, I would think the culmination now of this fund, that is it for the Red Cross, but that ongoing support, the trauma support that you talked about, is so important. So people know now, moving forward, they're not on their own. And, you know, you talked about that there's going to be extra training given now, that those people will remain in the community, because there's no end to, when we spoke about it earlier, this grief for people.
Yeah, I mean, those people listening, myself, yourself, everybody. But, you know, grief takes so many different forms. And this is one of those things that changes your life forever. And what we can do, and what the existing community organisations in the fabric of the community, as is the Red Cross in the fabric of the community in Donegal, what we can collectively do is to be there for people, to hold them, to signpost where necessary to some professional supports, but to hold people where they are, and to help people continue to find a purpose in life. And and that is what community groups do. That is what the Irish Red Cross does in Ireland and internationally. And it is an extraordinary privilege to be part of this movement.
Yeah. And last night as well, at the event, there were a number of people that were recognised for their work in the aftermath of the tragedy as well. And I know Father John Joe Duffy is one of those. And I think at the time of the explosion, you know, everybody looked towards him, even us in the media. He was that voice for the people that were impacted. So it's great to see these people now recognised for their work as well.
Yeah, we were, it's very hard to single people out. Yeah. We just, simple certificates of appreciation from the Irish Red Cross, that's what it was, that's what it took the form of. And we were very, very pleased. So Father John Joe was not just a source of leadership and inspiration, you know, for people here locally and for you, but also for us and for our team up there. And he spontaneously stood up and said a few words at the end of appreciation, which was very kind and generous of him. But as with every time I've heard him speak, both in the media and in person, you know, his humility and generosity of spirit and I guess his simple leadership from behind, so to speak, speaks volumes. And there are so many people who have done so much in that sort of quiet, humble way. And
Absolutely.
We were very happy to just say our small thanks and to acknowledge that everybody clubbed together in the aftermath and still does. And I know there are big plans in terms of development for the community of Chrysler and indeed beyond that will help the townland. And it is good to see. It is good to see. But it's still hard. You can feel it when you go. And but you can also feel the green shoots. Life, you know, continues for those for whom, you know, who are there still.
Yeah, that's it. And I suppose when we have conversations like this, we do always remember those that lost their life and their families and anybody who has been affected by this trauma. But Deirdre Garvey, Irish Red Cross Secretary General, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Hi, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It is Michaela Clark in for Greg Hughes this morning. A few comments as it relates to traffic in Letterkenny. I know this has been a hot topic over recent days. A listener says, crazy traffic delays, trying to make a 5 p.m. appointment in Derry, left an hour early, we still ended up 30 minutes late. It's crazy. I did hear about one person who drove to Letterkenny from Strabane maybe possibly Friday and took them 47 minutes and they turned and left home. And I just think that it's crazy that, you know, unfortunately somebody wants to come to Letterkenny and due to the traffic, and I don't know if there was time constraints, they had to turn then and go home. Great wee town to do business, ? Another listener says, at night of course when there's no traffic about, time for a bypass they ask, oh the bridge is off the cards. Another listener says, an absolute disgrace to this town, it's time the boys that were voted in get their finger out, look at the new roads all around Dublin, look after them, self is all they do. I do think that, you know, the councillors do make representations, are continually lobbied on traffic issues in the town, but they're, I don't know if it's central government or what it is, there just seems to be no sense of urgency. And I just, you know, commuting in and out of Letterkenny, just feel that it's getting worse and worse over time. And, you know, I came down one evening, thankfully the hours that I don't have to sit in the traffic, I'd be in and out before rush hour starts. But I came down one evening and I think it was possibly maybe 6:30, and maybe it was after 7 actually. And I thought, you know, there wouldn't be delays at that time. But coming in that four lane route was just crazy, even at that hour of the evening. And, you know, I suppose do residents kind of feel that they can't go out and about, say, between 8:30, 9:30 in the morning or the evening rush hour? You know, is that something as a resident in Letterkenny, do you avoid those times? And I suppose you shouldn't have to avoid getting in the car any time of day you want, but just because there's serious traffic. And I think it's a great sign for Donegal as a whole that so many people want to come in and visit, and they want to, you know, visit West Donegal, go on to Remelton, Rathmullen, Downings. They all have to go through Letterkenny, and I just, there's so much expansion in the town and, you know, so much investment, and it's great to see, but there's, it obviously just can't cope. And I just think that it does need to be looked at seriously, and there does need to be such a sense of urgency in relation to get this sorted. Is it going to hamper further investment? I suppose nobody really knows the answer to that. Another listener says, I left Vet on Shore Road, Remelton at 5:15 p.m. after having my 14 and a half year old beloved pup cross the Rainbow Bridge. I got home to Solomon's Glen Car at 7:20 p.m. over 2 hours to travel a distance of about 9 miles. Absolutely dreadful, this listener says. Yeah, indeed. This will only get worse when they close the lane at Mount Errigal for a cycle lane and put in more traffic lights at Ballyrain. That hat is a huge issue and bone of contention as well. And there was such discussion on that at the time. But obviously, those plans have gone ahead. And, you know, the cycle lane is going to be implemented there. It was much better, another listener. It was not much better, another listener says. Had to go to Letterkenny for two appointments. It took nearly an hour to get there from Remelton. Second time I went through Kiltoy, but only a bit better. Another listener says we need somebody to stand up and take decisive action. Yeah, that's the issue. You know, and I suppose councillors can make so many representations, but, you know, somebody needs to do something about it. And I suppose I'm preaching to the converted. Now, littering is a huge issue, never mind the traffic in Letterkenny, and there's been such discussion about it right here in Donegal. But I'm joined now by Councillor Paul Boggs. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Morning, Michaela.
So, Councillor Paul Boggs, we've discussed litter so many times here in Donegal, but many people would have seen possibly that there was a social media video circulating in recent days, and it showed a woman on Strabane Bypass literally stopping traffic and dumping rubbish, and it was crazy seeing how blatant that was.
It is, and it's not the only occurrence of littering that we've seen in recent days across West Tyrone, indeed Strabane. I'm aware now that you know, locals who've seen that unfolding have spoken to the police, and that's a matter now for them to take on in relation to investigating that littering offence, because anybody who litters or causes that kind of unwarranted destruction to communities, it needs to be dealt with, and the anger that was felt by people in Strabane whenever they seen that, because, you know, people try to keep the community as clean as they can. And whenever that kind of thing is seen then, people are rightly angry, and it needs to be called out, and people need to realise that it's not acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. And the video, it sees a member of the public try to approach this woman and ask her what she's doing, and she just proceeds to dump the rubbish and drive off. And I just think it's, you know, we see so many instances of fly tipping and illegal dumping done, you know, under the guise of, say, darkness, but it was broad daylight, which I just think is crazy.
Yeah, I suppose it's a very unusual case. And for me, while absolutely agree that it's not right, and in fact, it's quite shameful to see, I would, I suppose, question whether there is a vulnerability there, that somebody feels that is okay to do, or that, you know, there is no regard given to the fact that you're in broad daylight, you're in a very busy road. So I would just ask people until investigations are carried out in relation to it, that people maybe don't speculate as much as maybe could be seen to be warranted at the moment, just to try and give a bit of space to try and find out the facts of what happened in that particular instance.
Yeah. And there was another incident, unfortunately, in the Murlock area then as well. What was discovered there?
Yeah, so I suppose this is an ongoing issue right across our rural communities. And from the outset, I want to say that I very much support our rural communities and their fight back against unwarranted fly tipping right across their roads, but particularly in this instance in an area that is absolutely outstandingly beautiful, which is Murlock, which is used by fishers, by people who use it for open water swimming, as part of sports clubs. It's used by walkers who use the lock as a place to go and get away and relax and take ease to themselves. But over the weekend, there was more fly tipping at Murlock and bags of household waste just left at the side of the lock, and it shows absolutely no regard again for rural dwellers and those who use Murlock for a recreational space. But the bottom line is that, you know, rural communities in particular, no community should be used as a dumping ground, and it's unacceptable to see that kind of flight up and that volume of rubbish being left at a rural location that's there for the enjoyment of everybody.
And I suppose, you know, in Strabane there's free facilities, there's a dump so people can go freely, they don't have to pay to get rid of this rubbish. So it just feeds into that total disrespect for the locals that use that area, and, you know, I suppose the council staff that now have to pick up after them.
Yes, well, I suppose, you know, it's free at the point of disposing your waste, but obviously people pay in the north, people pay for waste collection and for the disposal of their household waste. They pay through that through their council rate, mm-hmm. their district rate. But you know, I take on your point. There are numerous avenues for people to get rid of their waste, whether it's through weekly collections at curbside bins, bulky waste collections, which can be arranged through council, or just using your local recycling centre. So there's absolutely no excuse for people to be either, as you say, in the guise of darkness, in the cover of darkness, or in broad daylight, to be using local recreational areas, local areas of natural beauty to be disposing of the rubbish. It's not acceptable, and it doesn't give off the right image that the services aren't there, that people need to dispose of the rubbish. They absolutely are. And even, you know, at Murlough itself in particular, I've engaged with local council officers recently in relation to getting the bins emptied more frequently, in relation to having more regular litter picks. So council workers are doing more and more to try and keep our communities clean, but our own residents also need to pick up, you know, a part of the mantle and a part of the responsibility and dispose of their own domestic household waste in a responsible way to ensure that our communities are kept as clean and safe as possible. So there are options there for people, and I would really encourage people to use the weekly collections, the bulky waste collections and the recycling centres that are there to dispose of waste appropriately and properly.
And are you aware of Derry City and Strabane District Council being able to identify people through waste that has been dumped? I know it obviously depends on what's dumped, but are you aware of any successful cases in relation to this?
I'm led to believe at this stage that we have had some successes in the past. So, for instance, if, you know, people dump waste and there is anything identifiable and to them on that, whether that be post or, you know, packaging from a package that was delivered to a house, then there are avenues there for enforcement against a responsible dumping and fly tipping. So that is something that the council officers have my full support on, that if we can identify these people who are blatantly throwing and fly tipping their domestic waste out, or business waste for that fact, but that doesn't seem to be as big of an issue. It is mainly domestic waste. Council officers have my full support and trying their best to find those that are responsible and to pursue them in whatever way that we can as a council, because everybody has a responsibility, absolutely everybody has a responsibility to ensure that we keep our community safe and clean, and if pursuing those who haven't signed up to that kind of idea, then I fully support that we try and pursue them in whatever way possible.
Councillor Paul Boggs, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I think it's just beggar's belief that people just, you know, it happens everywhere right across the entire country. And we've talked about it so many times here in Donegal. And I suppose in the north, you know, you're paying your rates, but you have the facilities, the dumping, you know, you have weekly bin collections. And then, you know, in the Republic of Ireland, you pay your local property tax. You then have to additionally pay for your waste collection. I just think, you know, what is it that is causing people to do this? Is it just complete laziness? They don't want to take their rubbish home, or is it a cost factor? But I don't know. It's totally unacceptable, and there just appears to be no end to it. Now, we're discussing litter there in the Strabane area. I'm joined now on the line by Marion McDonald, who is the chair of the Moville Tidy Towns. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning.
So, Maureen, you were contacted by a holidaymaker in the Moville area. What was their issue?
They were coming up from the shore path, coming up towards the town, and their two bags of rubbish were left out, and the birds and the dogs and the cats, everything all over the street.
And I suppose it's birds and cats at this time, but, you know, the fear is that vermin could be attracted to this.
That's quite true. But every morning this week we're getting word about bags left here and bags left there. So it's a matter of just going down and taking your picker and your gloves and everything, taking everything with you.
And what kind of rubbish? Is it household waste? Is it somebody who has been in the area, they've bought stuff in the shop, takeaways? What kind of rubbish are you discovering?
It's household waste, but the bag that we got yesterday was disposable nappies.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and you just wonder what goes through people's mind that they think that they can just dump this.
That's quite true, yeah.
And in that particular area, is there enough bins provided?
There's plenty of bins along the shorefront. There's plenty of bins along the street.
And is this something you've seen an increase in? I talked about that, you know, there does seem to be so much of a conversation around this. We know that there were incidences previously, but it might have been once in a blue moon, but now it appears to be every week.
This is every day. This is every day. We're getting a phone call nearly every morning.
And I suppose
on Sunday morning, along the shore path, there were 4 bags of rubbish left.
Hmm. And, you know, tiny town groups, they're exceptional and you have to be commended for the work that you do. But it's, you know, it's unacceptable then that people take liberties and think, you know, the tiny town group will be out in the morning, they'll clean up after us. It's not right.
Yeah, that's quite true. We're all volunteers and the majority of people in our committee are working.
Yeah. And what would your message, Marion, be to people visiting Moville, you know, that decide, you know, they might leave their rubbish behind them?
Well, I think a lot of these people might be staying in houses that there are no bins provided.
Right, like Airbnb kind of type of houses.
Yeah, that's quite true, because what we're getting is all household rubbish, and it's big, big bags of rubbish. So, I you know, it's... Maybe the people leave it out thinking that the bin man's going to collect it, but it's not collected. But if everybody really looked after their own, and we would have absolutely no bother, and tidy up and just pick up the litter and put it in the bins.
Yeah. Maureen McDonald, Chair of the Moville Tidy Towns Group, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And I suppose that is a very important point. Maybe there are places that people are visiting and have booked to stay that the adequate... waste facilities aren't in place for them. That, I suppose, is something to consider. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back after the news at 10.